This is Waddle and Sylvie.
I like bubbly water. That's what I like when I'm getting measured.
Noons from 2 to 6.
Would you ever go to a beer garden in December and say, you know what we need to do tonight to your wife?
On ESPN Chicago.
Yeah, that was fun. The beer garden in December with your wife. Dan Weider here in a couple of minutes. The Bears made some moves a little, like about 24 hours ago, right towards the end of the show yesterday, where they hired John DeFilippo. So now he's the quarterback's coach. Dave Ragone goes from quarterback's coach to passing game coordinator. Helfrich is out. They've got Laser in.
Laser.
And then Castillo is in as the offensive line coach. Mm-hmm. And he stand is out.
Yep.
Gilbride is out at tight end coach. And Baroni is in. Mm-hmm. I think I've got all the things. Now, will this mean one bit of change on offense?
That is the big question. I don't know the answer to that.
Like, you need a new roster for your coaches.
Listen, I don't know. There are going to be different voices in the room. So maybe they will find different creative ways to do things. But I feel pretty certain that Matt's voice is still going to be the loudest. He's still going to be the one that has final say on the game plan, and he's still going to be the one calling plays on Sunday. So my hope is that Matt does an enormous self-scout of himself, looks at his tendencies, look where he did some things where he needs to improve, and then we see a better version of Matt, play caller Matt Nagy, in 2020.
The one thing that I've read about John DeFilippo, who was up for the Bears head coaching job, is even though he's gotten fired by the Vikings and then the Jaguars, he still gets good reviews as a quarterback's coach and what he's going to do for the Bears. That Carson Wentz had his best year in his second year when DeFilippo was their quarterback's coach. That's the same year that Nick Foles was able to step in and win the Super Bowl as DeFilippo was his quarterback's coach. And then this year with Jacksonville, they took a late-round pick in Gardner Minshew. And you had games where Gardner Minshew did deliver some pretty good games.
And I think that's a valid statement. I would just add that usually in life it's difficult to replace guys that do good things. So if those things were as good as, if they were, those things were good, why are you not keeping that person? If he provides a service, a good service to you, why are you not finding a reason or a way to keep that person?
Let's ask Dan Weider that question as we talk some Bears with Dan. Answer Waddle's question, Dan. Is John DeFilippo a good hire?
I believe so. In the role that he's being hired for as a quarterback's coach, I think he's got a tremendous reputation around the league as being a very good teacher. Obviously, from his days in Philly, he understands this offense. He was instrumental in that run in 2017 in having Carson Wentz positioned as an MVP candidate and helping Nick Foles take over the steering wheel when that time came. And the reviews out of Philadelphia were strong in terms of what Flip meant to that group and that offense and that rise. In Minnesota, 2 years ago, there's a belief that that was just a philosophical mismatch, that DeFilippo's desire to want to throw the ball a lot and do some things just really rubbed Mike Zimmer the wrong way, who wants to be a ball control, ground and pound type of guy. And there's a lot of sort of a sentiment up in Minneapolis that when Tony Sparano died right before that 2018 training camp began, that there was a middleman lost in terms of a guy that could help sort of build the bridge between DeFilippo and Zimmer. And so that it just never clicked. It never worked. And he was, you know, shipped out of there in the middle of a disappointing season. Not fully sure at what went wrong in Jacksonville with DeFilippo and why he's available now, but I do think that his presence will be valuable in that quarterback's room, particularly within this system and this offense, and understanding exactly what plays are designed to do and then how you go about getting them to do those things.
Can you make a case, Dan, though, that one of the things that and again, I'm not in that quarterback room, so I'm more than an arm's distance from them, but that there were too many voices in Mitch's head, and now you're adding a couple of different voices to the equation. Is this something that possibly, at least early on, could be something that they're going to have to overcome?
Well, it's something that you're going to have a plan for, and I'm very curious to continue gathering and doing homework on figuring out what the exact plan is and how you go about making sure that the voices are heard when they need to be heard and other voices are tuned out when they need to be tuned out, and knowing exactly what each person that is now part of this offensive staff is responsible for and what their priorities are. I trust that Matt has a vision for this, that he didn't just go out over the last 2 weeks and just bring a bunch of people into the room and say, all right, let's figure this out as we go. You get a feeling that there is a vision for this. Now it's their chance to sort of help us understand what that is and what that's going to look like on a weekly basis and how it's designed to work. I think you can get your arms around it. I don't think it's unusual in today's NFL to have a lot of different voices that can have use to you and can help you develop your offense. It can help you evolve and be adaptable to the talent you have. And so it's now up to Matt to just sort of put these pieces together and then articulate exactly where the delineation of roles is.
Dan, do you believe that a quarterback who played under one of these guys could be headed to Chicago? For instance, Nick Foles, as we mentioned, with DeFilippo in both Philly and in Jacksonville. Andy Dalton under Lazor, their new offensive coordinator. These are a couple guys who have been rumored to be available. So do you believe one of them would be here?
Yeah, I don't know yet. There's a long time to go yet before we have answers to those things. I think that, everybody wants to get out the crayons and the connect the dots book when we have these types of changes in the coaching ranks, and it happens all the time where whether it's free agency or the draft or whatever it may be, that you try to find the connections and say, oh, that makes natural sense that, you know, player X is going to join this coach here and join the system. I don't know yet whether the Bears are going to go down those roads and try to figure out how to, you know, maneuver a trade here or there to make something happen if it needs to happen. We'll see. I think with a lot of these changes, and I think you guys sort of alluded to it right before I came on, what's really difficult about this is we're going to have to wait 9.5 months to have any sort of evidence to know whether anything is working. And it's going to be very frustrating. It's going to be very patience testing from the outside, because we've learned that whatever they tell us at OTAs in May and June, whatever they tell us at minicamp, whatever they tell us in the first stretch of training camp, you can't believe it. You got to use your eyes to assess what's going on. And ultimately, until they start playing games and showing that the offense can actually score 25 points, we don't know. We don't know whether any of this stuff is going to work. And so, you know, it's a wait and see process. We're a long way from being able to see anything that means anything. And so we got to figure out what happened.
I think money is going to be an issue, too. And I mean, listen, I just went back because what I remembered was Foles signed a pretty big deal. And I know that's just a name, you know, or a suggestion. He signed a 4-year, $88 million contract joining the Jags and has $50 million in guaranteed money. So, and Andy Dalton, I believe, is getting paid like $17 million. You'd have to trade for him. There may be very few options in terms of upgrading the quarterback position, aren't there, Dan?
Yeah, it is definitely going to be limited. And then you've got to figure out, if it's not a guy that, you know, is going to be available to you on the free agent market, what does it cost, not only in terms of contract-wise, but in terms of capital that you have to send away to bring a guy here? So there's a lot of complicated parts to this whole equation. I think that they're very determined. Obviously, I think we're all of the belief that QB2 line is going to be upgraded between now and the time that they play a game in September. And so now we just have to kind of let the process, which is very, very fluid on a lot of levels, unfold and see where it takes us in the next, you know, 2 months or so. And then when we get closer to the draft, see what that opens up and see where it goes. But look, this Bears offense was a mess last year. We've acknowledged it. We've documented it. We've talked about it a lot. I give them credit for at least getting behind closed doors and trying to figure out a shakeup that they believe is going to point them in the right direction. Now we've just got to see if it happens. You guys watched it last weekend. The Chiefs, in two quarters of play, in the second and third quarter, scored 41 points. The Bears, 37 points in their last three games.
Oh my gosh.
Hey, Dan, how do you feel about the fact, or what do you have to say about the fact that all of the offensive hires that they've made are all guys that didn't have jobs or were out of football? And Flip's not one of those guys, but the other guys are all guys that weren't employed by an NFL team last year.
Yeah, I don't really know what to make of it, to be honest with you. It's a good question, and it's one that's certainly worth sort of digging around on and figuring out if there's anything to it. The coaching profession is so rapidly turned over in a lot of different ways, and there are timing issues, there are, you know, personal issues, whatever it may be. So I don't sort of read into that to any level that says, oh, they got three bums in here. You know,
right.
I think it just all sort of factors in. Again, I mentioned the death of Tony Sperano. That forced Clancy Barone,
right,
when he was with the Vikings, to switch over to a position that he was very unfamiliar with. It's sort of an emergency role to take over the offensive line. They didn't perform very well. He got kicked out the door and waited for his next chance to resurface, and here it comes. And so we'll see. I was out at Twin Peaks with Carmen Yurko the day that Clancy Barone hire was made, and with Mark Potash out there. And Potsy said, I said, hey, they just hired Clancy Barone. And he said, huh, I wonder what tight ends he's going to bring with him. And so I think for a lot of these discussions that we have, it's a very good point to make, right? Yeah, well, let's see who they're actually coaching before we judge, you know, how good a coach they are, and then we can kind of put these pieces together that way.
And I'm not trying to suggest that these are all, you know, horrible hires because of that, but it is a little, I mean, and I get it. I mean, you know, it's hard to hire away really good coaches from teams that really want to, you know, to stay where they are at. So I'm not trying to imply anything, but the other thing on that topic, let me ask you the other question. Brad Childress decides he's not going to stay. Now, he's a Stefanski guy, right? Or that, like, Stefanski's got ties to him.
He hired Stefanski in Minnesota.
And he's got, I mean, I believe Chile was the offensive coordinator in Cleveland back in 2000. I guess, again, the question I would ask, what purpose really did Chile serve here in Chicago? And if he had really good thoughts about what direction this team was headed with Mitch,
rub it,
why would he leave? Okay, you know, again, I'm just asking questions.
He's
that,
old. He's retiring. No,
I don't know that he's retiring. Is he retiring, Dan?
So we'll see. So Brad did retire a couple years ago, and then obviously the Bears brought him on as a consultant, and he thought so highly of Matt that he said, "Here, let's go to Chicago. Let's help Matt get his feet on the ground as a coach, and I can be a sounding board in that regard."
But my point is, real quick, let me interject this real quick. If you thought your rocket was headed to the moon, is that when you decide to walk?
Yeah, I you make a very valid point. I don't know that there's anyone in the building right now that was sensing that a rocket was headed to the moon. I think, you know, no matter what they say, I think we all lived and experienced the 2019 football season in a similar fashion, and that rocket
to the moon, Alice!
To the moon, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like those little science rockets that I build with my son out in the driveway that go, you know, 4 feet in the air, and then vinegar and baking soda explodes all over me, and then the, you know, the whole thing is
sounds like a Sunday on the lakefront, doesn't it, in October?
So here we are, you know, trying to figure out how to get that rocket ship pointed in the right direction. And I do think that, again, I said this to Cap earlier, that we can get lost in discussions in the offseason a lot, and some of them are valuable, some of them aren't. We have to remember that ultimately this comes down to, on 16 game days in the fall, whether the quarterback can see receivers open, and when they are open and he sees them, can he put the throw where it needs to be thrown to catch the ball and score touchdowns? And ultimately, it comes down to what you can do in small ways to adjust things, to put him in a better position to succeed and have this high-level success. But ultimately, when the ball is snapped, the quarterback has to be capable of making those plays, and if he's not, all of these things don't really mean anything. And I think we've seen some of that throughout the playoffs, where you just see guys capable of turning nothing into something, and all of a sudden it changes a drive, which changes a quarter, which changes a game, and, you know, ultimately a season has changed. So that ultimately is what this is going to circle back to over and over and over again.
Dan, before we let you go, I want you to weigh in on three different things. First of all, the NFC Championship game. Who do you got there?
San Francisco was so dominant in the first meeting, and I know it's sort of dangerous to fall into that trap and think that that's going to repeat itself, but they just were so dominant in taking apart that Packers offense, and they've looked so good in big games throughout the year that I think they are going to win that game.
What about the AFC title game?
The Chiefs, to me, feel like the team that's hit the stride and looks like the team that's going to be holding up the Lombardi Trophy in 3 weeks.
Yeah, I agree with you. And then the poll question, you weighed in off the air with me. You were surprised at the voting yesterday, the one that Yurko provided us. If you could only give one guy the Hall of Fame berth, would it be Devin Hester or Peanut Tillman? Who would it be?
Yeah, it's Devin, and I didn't even blink. And then when I clicked my answer on the poll question and saw that it was an even split, I sort of moved back in my chair. I don't know how you guys voted. Devin was a different animal, and Devin, you know, scored 20 touchdowns, and Devin had teammates and coaches and everybody else moving up to the sideline and on the edge of their seats every time he was on the field. It was just, you knew it. You know, from season one to the very end, you knew that this was special. This was otherworldly. Charles was an excellent football player, really, really good. Belongs for certain in the Hall of the Very, Very Good. Hall of Fame, I shrug my shoulders a little bit because, you know, what he made two Pro Bowls in 14 years, maybe one All-Pro team during that time. Really, really good. And I think people get lost sometimes in that argument of that, oh, you're saying he doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame. You don't think he was a great player. Charles Tillman was a great player. Right. I just think that Devin was in a class of his own. And I guess I'd be interested to hear how you guys vote.
Like I always say, same thing. Same
yeah,
exactly. It's not a vote against. It's a vote for Devin Hester from me.
Yeah, and by the way, the Peanut Tillman voters rallied at the end
yeah.
where we had nearly 13,000 votes. The voting is closed. Peanut Tillman got 50.4% of the vote.
There you go.
And Devin Hester got 49.6%.
I think Yurko voted more than once. and did you see Peanut also responded yes. with like the eyes?
And the peanut
and
punch.
And then the peanut punch, what do you call those things?
Emojis,
so...
Yeah, I think when those discussions come up in rooms, I think you're going to see that Hester is going to be a fast track guy into Canton, and Peanut might be one of these guys that you know. I don't know the first time he'll be a finalist. I'd be stunned if the first year Devin was eligible that he wasn't one of those 15 finalists. You know, I mean, last year I did that story on his kickoff return touchdown to open the Super Bowl, and talking to all those people from the Colts and just hearing the way that they just instantly rubber stamped him as a for sure Canton, Ohio guy was impressive to hear how just, you know, gut instinct it was. Oh, there's no question, guy's in. And, you know, he made us lose sleep every time we had to face him. And that's kind of what you're looking for when you're talking to people about Hall of Famers.
Dan, great stuff. Always
Thanks,
appreciate
Dan.
Your time.
All right, guys, be good.
There you go. Dan Weeder from the Chicago Tribune.
I'm not trying to present this, you know, feeling like, hey, you know, the Bears are headed for disaster because of who they hired. These are just all interesting questions, aren't they, as they
yes,
hire people?
Of course.
And when I say to you, why would Chili walk away? Maybe Chili just got tired of football. I don't know. But let me just ask you a question. If he thought really, like, Mitch was on the cusp of good things and they were on the cusp of getting where they wanted to go, maybe you do walk away personally because you want to go do something else.
Well, why do you walk away from Andy Reid then if that's the case? Do you know what I'm saying?
Did he?
Like, if you really wanted to go to the moon, wouldn't you go with Pat Mahomes and Andy Reid? Like, he chose to go with Nagy because they were so close.
Okay.
Like, Nagy, and again, he went to go coach the AAF team. And then that failed, and then instead of retiring, he's like, okay, I'll be the senior offensive consultant for another year with you. Now, maybe he does go with Stefanski because they're close, too. Right. I don't know. But I'm not sweating that Brad Childress.
No, I'm not sweating it, but it feels like hey, if everything's great, everyone wants to be here. They don't want to go elsewhere. Right?
I guess, but Brad Childress is just a senior consultant walking away for whatever reason.
What was he here for then?
I don't know. That's a great question because what did he provide
when
he
was here? That was the start of my question was what was Chili really doing for the team?
What was he advising? Because it wasn't the right thing. You know, it was the run game. And
I'm just saying, it's like last guy out, turn off the lights, right?
Yeah, it'd be one thing if he walked away and just wasn't involved in football anymore.
But I thought he was going to Cleveland,
that's what I'm saying.
Wasn't he, to be with Stefanski?
If it ends up where he's
I don't know.
In a similar role in Cleveland, it does seem odd.
He's only 63. I mean, he's not, you know. I don't know. Listen, I'm just asking. I'm here for questions to be asked. That's all.
If we're worried about Brad Childress at this stage, we've got bigger problems.
No, no, no. But listen, it's not about Brad Childress.
I know what
you're
saying.
It's about what's going on there. Is everybody, I mean, are we all starting to feel less about what we're doing? Are we all starting? Guys, it was a rough year, but we're still really, everything's going to be fine. Everything's going to be great.
Well, the other coaches didn't walk away. The other coaches got fired.
Some of them did, yeah.
Who walked away?
No, they all did. They all got fired.
They all got fired.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know if it's a want to be here, But it's, yeah, they've got issues. They've got a quarterback issue, they've got a play calling issue, and they've got a personnel issue.
Well,
they've
maybe Chili wanted to call plays, and Matt said, no, sir. And maybe. Chili said, bye-bye. I don't know.
It's all part of the coup.
312. Yeah, Abdallah believes this is Nagy's first step in overthrowing Ryan Pace as the general manager.
I ran it by Weider off the air, and he goes,
no.
He just, there was a silent pause, and he goes, I love a good conspiracy. Yeah.
You know what this is? This is about surrounding yourself with people that you're familiar with. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. But this is what happens in coaching in all sports.
All right. A lot of people want to call. And now we're guest-free the rest of the way. So we'll take all your phone calls, 312-332-3776.
Join Northwestern Basketball, Welsh Ryan Arena this winter. Opponents include Maryland, Ohio State, Purdue, and Michigan. Single game tickets on sale now at NUSports.com.
All right, I've got David Ross being asked the question, hey, is Chris Bryant going to be on your roster this season? That's next.
Waddle and Sylvie, afternoons from 2 to 6 on ESPN Chicago.
I think the fans should expect him to be there. It's an exciting time to be a Cubs manager. There's a lot of talent, and there's no ceiling for this team. I really think this team can win the World Series, so that's the way I'm looking at things.
So, saying the standard stuff about whether or not Chris Bryant's going to be here, but we will see. Jesse was in studio a little bit earlier, and he told us that Atlanta really loves Chris Bryant.
Wouldn't it be funny if Chris showed up tonight with an Atlanta Braves t-shirt underneath his dress shirt?
For Cubs convention.
Just to kind of, troll people.
Tweak them, yeah.
Great.
Anthony Rizzo also said something interesting. Jesse just tweeted this. Anthony Rizzo said the Cubs have followed the rules baseball put forth on sign stealing. Quote, I think it's 100% safe to say that's for sure on the record. So if anyone wants to say, well, the Cubs could be one of those teams that cheated, that'd be the worst nightmare, is they finally broke through in 16, and then you find out maybe they were the ones who set the trend. But DeRizzo says no. You know what I'm saying?
I'm telling you, this of all of the cheating scandals, and I'm sure you could bring other ones to me that may eclipse this, but as I'm living in the moment now, like I said earlier, this one is the most egregious. Like, you know what pitch is coming? I get it. You filmed the walkthrough the day before. That's offsides. That's not good. You're not allowed to do that. But this is like pitch by pitch. They're banging drums or they're doing something so that
Buzzers,
you know.
Buzzers is the latest rumor.
Whatever
now.
It is, you know exactly what pitch is coming. Like, I could have taped your walkthrough. I don't know what play is coming. Maybe I can break down your tendencies a little bit. But I don't know what play is coming play by play.
I don't know how many people know about this. It's been talked about the last couple of days, but it's getting more exposure now. Altuve hit a walk-off homer for the Astros. It was in the postseason, wasn't it, against the Yankees?
This year against Chapman that sent them to the... It was an extra innings, right, in Game 7, Meller? That sent them to the World Series, wasn't it? Against Chapman. Don't you remember Chapman came in and was throwing BBs? And I'm like, no way, nobody's hit.
So that
this.
Was this year when the Altuve thing happened?
Unless my brain is just completely gone.
Find out, double check for sure. But anyway, Altuve, as he's rounding third, puts his arms around his jersey to button up, like to motion that he's buttoning it up. And he says, don't pull my jersey off. Don't pull my jersey off.
Maybe it was his favorite jersey.
And some of the conspiracy and rumor now is that the Astros used a buzzer system.
Okay.
Where they put a buzzer underneath his jersey, or other Bregman too. Someone tweeted about that, they would buzz. The video guy who's watching the signs would buzz whether it was a fastball or off-speed pitch.
Altuve homered off of Aroldis Chapman with two outs in the ninth inning, and Houston outlasted the Yankees 6-4 Saturday night to advance to the World Series. That's from this October.
Okay, this October.
So he hit the home run off of Chapman. I mean,
this thing could have evolved since 17, that they were cheating in 17, and then it's become more high-tech since then.
So,
did you see this is what Rizzo said, too? Rizzo said 100% teams were sign-stealing on the Cubs, but didn't know how far it went, and also said teams would sometimes make sounds as a decoy to make it look like they were stealing. So he couldn't say for sure anything about the Astros based on the three games that they played last year.
I agree with Waddle that the sign stealing is worse, and especially if there was electronics involved. Because if the Patriots were filming the practices. That's something that the coaches control, the video people control. Like, Tom Brady isn't like, hey, we need to film practices. You know, like, Rob Gronkowski isn't there just going like, hey, Belichick, we need to start filming these practices.
Yeah, but that's also trespassing.
Well, you're
breaking into their practice.
How many laws are you going to go through here? How many laws are you going to try to pin them on here? Because, like, you can just get them for one. But if you were wearing a buzzer or wearing an electronic device, then the player is definitely complicit in it. Like, if this is just Belichick trying to get an edge, the players have nothing to do with it.
You're complicit in it as long as you're receiving the signals as well. You're complicit. Yeah. I mean, when you hear,
benefiting from it, yeah.
Fastball, like, you are totally complicit.
Like, the sign stealing could just be a Bel... Or not sign stealing. The taping the practices could just be a Belichick coaching staff thing. Not the players.
Come on. Not the but the whole game plan is geared around
but
that.
But the players benefit from it. I mean, like... It's hard to separate.
Unknowingly.
Oh, sure. I'm just talking about the level of the transgression. Like, what's worse to you?
I know what you're saying. I think what the Patriots did is really on par. Again, you're not supposed to be at their practice.
You're not supposed to do a lot of things.
But you are allowed to sign steal. The basic part of sign stealing has been a part of it. I'm not saying this is right, but I'm saying they just use technological advancements to continue the art of sign stealing.
What if they had buzzers on their chests?
I know, it's terrible. I just don't know if you could say, well, this one is by far worse than that one.
I feel strongly about it.
Well, it's interesting, too, because the other aspect of this is that, which there hasn't really been anything proven per se, but also Trevor Bauer has thrown the accusations around that the Astros use a foreign substance on the ball to help increase their pitcher's spin rates.
What the hell? Do the Astros do anything legal?
They don't do anything moral or legal. Like, you saw where the guy got fired for what he was saying to the media.
That's why I said no more Astros for a year.
Okay.
No Astros.
Now.
No Astros.
You convinced me. Fold them up for a year and let them start again and disperse their talent and do some sort of a
dispersal draft. And instead of redoing the schedule, just give every team a win that day. The team that's facing the Astros that day gets an automatic win. You get an extra day off and you get a win.
And then now you can open your doors in 2021, but you have to start as an expansion team.
Yes, fresh, new draft.
Well, you may find yourself with five teams when this is all done.
Do you want to argue with our lawyer friend, Bob?
Listen, first of all, I don't want to argue with anyone. Second of all, I don't want to argue with a lawyer.
Well, that's Bob. Did you
and
hear
thirdly, him? I don't want to argue with a lawyer that's a really talented lawyer.
But Bob, who is a frequent caller, and he's a lawyer, I think his head was spinning when he was trying to talk Cap. Did you hear him when he called Cap the other day?
No.
And Cap was arguing with Cap, and Bob, I think, got spun around so silly.
Did Bob tap out?
Bob, did I read you correct that you were exasperated trying to argue some sense into Cap the other day?
Well, that's always a losing proposition, and I must admit I was driving at the time, so when Cap was mentioning the fact that, you know, imparting that I should know the mentality of a horse, I couldn't quite come to
the response, right, Bob? That
I was talking to a jackass. But in any event.
Wow. Can't we all just get along for crying out loud?
Jackass.
But in any event, I was kind of perplexed by your take on this cheating thing, Tom. I mean, the bottom line is, with Aroldis Chapman in a high leverage situation, if you really need a buzzer to tell you that he's going to come with a fastball, I don't know about, you know, your thought process going up to the plate and what your plan of attack is going to be. But as far as football is concerned, I mean, at the end, let me backtrack a second. As far as baseball is concerned, I don't care if you know what's coming, you still have to hit it. And the bottom line is, against Aroldis Chapman, I'm not entirely sure that any particular prior knowledge is going to help you with him one way or the other.
Well, you got to know that, like, I would think, having played a little baseball back in my day, very little, but like, if you're facing a guy that's got as dominant a fastball as Chapman, if you know that it's not going to be a fastball, or you know that it's the fastball, I would think you would have a greater advantage against someone like him than someone who wasn't as talented as Chapman.
No doubt. But when you're comparing that to cheating in the football scale, this is what I would say. And for particularly what you're saying, when you're trying to differentiate one option against another and how you're going to respond to one option against the other. If I'm game planning and I'm Belichick – And I know that a particular team with down and distance tendencies is going to do the following 10 things. And I know that based on personnel groupings, those 10 things are going to be limited by half. And now I know that what the signs are going to be to rule out that half and even lower the percentage. He's a percentage player. And if I'm sitting there on the sidelines knowing what the signs are and being able to correlate that to personnel groupings and down and distance, and football being a game purely of fits, and I can basically set my defense according to tendencies, down and distance, and knowing the signs, isn't that a more egregious kind of a violation than baseball is?
I would first ask this. I have not seen the video of what they filmed at practice, but when we were in practice, our coaches were standing behind the huddles, so no signs were sent in. So I don't know that they were stealing signs by taping a practice, because as we practiced, and again, it may have changed, they weren't on the sidelines calling.
That was under Wani, though.
This is under Ditka as well, but we didn't signal in plays from the sidelines at practice. The second thing is the apples-to-apples comparison that I would use would be you have an in to the headsets. Like, you're picking up what they're... the coach is sending in as a play.
They did that too.
They tapped into the headset. To me, that would be more of an apples to apples comparison, because you're knowing what play they're running on every single play, just the same way that the Astros seem to know every single pitch what it was going to be. Now, if you told me that you did some film study and you taped them and then you try to use that information that you gleaned from the day before, that's significantly different than doing it on a play-by-play
basis.
Maybe
that's why none of Belichick's assistants ever make it, because they don't have the cheating advantage.
Mike Vrabel is in the AFC.
But he wasn't a coach, was he? He was a player. Wasn't he a coach with the Patriots?
He never coached with Belichick.
So, he's a player, aren't you? You're aware of all that stuff.
Nesby in Farmington Hills, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Nesby?
Hey, what's up, fellas? How y'all doing?
We're good.
All right. Hey, this is the thing that pisses me off, and I look at the MLB as a damn joke, okay?
Uh-huh.
First and foremost, you banish Pete Rose for what he did, but in the same breath, you don't strip them of their World Series titles. Which one is worse? It's both. It's the lesser of two evils, in my opinion.
Right. We talked about this.
Don't punish the player.
We talked about this earlier. Steve Stone said the worst thing, the worst thing, and it's not even close, is gambling on baseball. And that is by far the worst. That's what Stoney said. I think that Rose should be in, but I just want to give you some context.
Right, but see, this is my thing, though. Who holds that moral to say, oh, it's worse that you gambled on baseball, when until then, yes, that was the worst, but these people cheated. You cheated to get a World Series. You cheated the Dodgers possibly out of a dynasty. You cheated Clayton Kershaw probably out of who knows what. Remember when he was getting bashed? Clayton, what's wrong with Clayton?
Nesby, your phone's breaking up.
Nesby, I would say this. I think, and maybe this is the essence of what you're saying. There's the letter of the law and the spirit of the law. Yes, by the letter of the law, Pete Rose is banned for a lifetime because of that. I think what Nesby's saying is listen, what the Astros did was significantly more egregious to the game than what Pete did, but Pete's being held to a higher standard because of the letter of that law. And there's really, I don't think, any letter of the law that suggests you're going to be banned from baseball if you do this. Like, I don't think there's anything in the rules of baseball, are there, about using technology to cheat?
Well, right.
And if you do and you get caught, you're going to have X punishment.
Well, do you know what this is a result of? And one of these unintended consequences.
Analytics!
No, this is an unintended consequence of replay.
Yeah.
Of replay. The reason why they have these video things back there, one of the reasons, is so they can review a close play and know when to challenge a play before the seventh inning. And they're so close, so they're like, okay, wait a minute. We've got all this technology now where we can see everything in real time. Let's zoom in on the catcher now. Let's steal some signs. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it all came from that. Ken is in Naperville. You're on ESPN 1000. Hey, Kenny. Ken?
Sylvie. Yeah. How are you guys doing?
Good.
So I played minor league baseball and college baseball, and one of the assignments that the team had if you weren't playing was to steal signs. That was an assignment that you had in the middle of the game or during the game. And from that perspective, that was a part of what we did, whether it was to steal the catcher's signs, whether it was to steal what was going to happen on the base path, whether that was going to take place from the coach's perspective. We were assigned to do that. So stealing signs has always been a part of the game. So to say that technology has now advanced things, that's great, but why not take advantage of that since that's been part of the game forever? And I will say one thing, because I grew up in dugouts as well, because my father played Major League Baseball.
Ooh.
The three things that I'll say that was in the dugout was no spitting, no pepper, and no gambling. Every dugout, right?
Why was pepper banned?
Well, why was spitting banned?
Why was pepper banned? We have no idea why. But those are the three things. So gambling was a sin, right? And that's why Pete Rose will always be in that era of players that are in that situation, that if you gamble, then you're banned for the game. But stealing signs was always part of the game, no matter what level you were at. That was something that you just that was a competitive advantage.
So where'd you play, Ken? Where'd you play?
I played Division I baseball at San Jose State in California, and I played in the Northwest League for the San Francisco Giants.
That's pretty cool. Who is your dad? Yeah. Do you mind me asking?
I will. Ken Henderson.
All right. Very
he
cool.
He played for the White Sox and the Cubs. So
yeah,
look him up.
Nice. I do. I remember.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
You got it.
There you go. I like that.
Well,
I like stories
so
like
wait
that.
A second. So if you get busted spitting in the dugout, you're banned for life.
It's weird, and I never understood why pepper. You always would see that back in the 70s,
yeah,
that it would say on the wall, no pepper. And, like, pepper was a cool game, you know? You'd bunt, right? You'd catch it, and you bunt it, and then
I don't
you
remember
field
pepper.
It.
I know the remember, like, I know the play. You know, a guy got a fungo bat, and he's hitting your ground balls while someone else is taking batting practice. I don't remember pepper.
Pepper, from what I remember, was one guy had the bat, and then, like, three or four guys were really close to him in proximity with their gloves. And you'd underhand it to him, and he'd hit the ball to the people fielding. He'd have to have quick reflexes and then throw it back to him, and he'd hit it to another person. And then you were playing a quick game of pepper.
That's weird. It's really weird.
312-332-3776. So what was worse? Is it the Patriots, what they've done, or is it this new age? Like, there was a baseball guy whose dad played Major League Baseball. He played Division I baseball, who feels like Fred did, that sign stealing was always the way of baseball, that was a job in the dugout. And so now all they're doing is using a technological advancement to do what they've always done.
Well, let's say I throw a baseball, but now I'm using technology to throw it 150 miles an hour and you can't hit it. Like, I get this magical technological advancement I've attached to my arm. I'm using technology to throw the baseball faster than anyone's ever seen it.
We'll discuss Waddle's idea of robo-arm coming up next.
Get a behind-the-scenes look at the Waddle and Sylvie Show. Follow us on Instagram, at Waddle and Sylvie.
That's right, and a lot of people tweeting in saying that Altuve, the home run he hit against Chapman, what we were just discussing with Bob and before that it was a slider, and Altuve was clearly sitting on the slider.
Yeah.
Which is hard to do when you're throwing 103 miles an hour.
Yeah, I remember seeing it going like, wow, that's one of the most impressive things I've seen, was seeing him hit that ball out of the park at that time, crunch time.
So robo-arm is not something that's...
It's technology, yeah. Well, I mean, what if I had something done that I can throw a baseball?
I've always tried to throw harder. Now I'm just using my robo-arm.
Right.
Mark's in Lincoln Park. Marky, you're on ESPN 1000.
Hey, guys. I was just making a point with the producer. So, Tom, in your example of your the ball or Belichick or versus the baseball, both of these are champion teams.
Yep.
Meaning they pushed an envelope. And they are world champions. And look, I'm a total Chicago fan, Bears fan, whatnot. But you've got to believe every other program or team is trying to do this. They just perfected it. I mean, it sounds a little bit like sour grapes from everyone else. And they're going to drag everybody down. I realize what's going on. But now they're going to go after Boston, another world champion. It sounds like, I wasn't smart enough to do this. And so we're going to try to drag these guys down.
Yeah, I mean, maybe...
Or maybe
that's why, like, listen. Like I said earlier, I think, you know, taping a practice, you're not allowed to do it. It's in the rules, whatever. I just don't think it has the same level of impact of knowing exactly what pitch is coming from Aroldis Chapman, who throws 105 miles per hour. And I'm fine with sign stealing, as Ken, our caller, was discussing years ago when it was being done in that fashion. I just think once you bring technology into the arena, that's where it's just my personal opinion. That's where you draw the line, and you've crossed the line.
If you need it laid out statistically, too, the Houston Astros led Major League Baseball in number of strikeouts by their pitching staff, and they had the least amount of strikeouts as
because you knew what was coming.
Like, they just goes to show you how drastic a difference it can make.
Yeah. Mad Mac and Griffith, one of my favorite callers. Mac, you're on ESPN 1000.
Hey, I can't wait to see you guys tomorrow, but...
Bond card, Mac!
Attaboy. Hey, listen, I'm bringing out a little app for you guys that literally is going to revolutionize call-in programs on a sports venue or any radio station worldwide.
Hold on here. You invented an app for calling in sports talk radio shows?
Me? Well, I didn't invent it. I helped work on it. But the guy who's my partner, who is the owner of the app, I'm going to bring it to you guys tomorrow. And I'm telling you, it'll revolutionize call-in radio, as God is my witness.
It's called this phone where you dial the phone number. Then the next thing you know, you're on the air.
Don't listen to him, Mac. He's just being a fool.
Hey, I'll tell you what, Sylvie. If I'm wrong, I'll come up to your house. I'll teach you how to grill, and if I can't teach you, I'll buy you the $500 Weber for free. If I'm right, though, I get season tickets on you for the Bears.
But Mac, you got to stay for a week, and you got to sleep in the house, and you got to make sure that he knows how to grill. So you got to stay there for a week.
The last thing I want is to adopt his two misfits. Are you kidding me?
Season tickets.
Back to Pete Rose, though. Pete Rose never did a thing that altered a single second of a baseball game wouldn't have happened it did before, though.
Yep.
These guys were they were told what the future is. They looked into the future and were told what was coming at them.
Yeah,
That's impossible. They should lose their World Series, all of them. No two ways about it, man.
All right, Mac. See you tomorrow. We're going to be at Horseshoe, by the way, tomorrow. Horseshoe Casino, Hammond, Indiana. It's the book. And it's a great spot to put down a really bad teaser bet, which we will do.
I don't think they accept teasers because they're...
Oh, no?
I don't think that they play silly games like that. Do they? I don't think that they take
teasers. I'll have to find out when we get there.
Yeah, we'll try. Maybe you go up and ask for a teaser, and if they say no, you just demand, I want a teaser. I'm teasing this right here.
Yeah, you're going to demand a teaser.
A teaser.
What kind of app do you think he's done? What could possibly revolutionize simply calling into a radio show?
I don't know.
Mellor, any ideas? You're the tech guy of the show.
I have no idea. I'm intrigued, let me tell you that. Maybe it makes every caller better than they actually are.
George is in Old Town. Hey, George.
Hey, guys. Can't wait to see you tomorrow out there.
Oh, good. Yeah. You're coming too. Nice.
It's way worse what they did with the Astros. You have to punish the players somewhat. You have to if you're Major League Baseball, you have to claw that money back that they won for the divisional and World Series, and let LA have a big party or whatever you're going to do or donate to a cause. But they were cheating. It's like insider trading. It's insider knowledge. I mean, if it was the markets, they would be going to jail.
That's a good comp right there.
Like that jail time.
Yeah. If you want to vacate their titles, it's not something I would bark about. I think normally vacating titles doesn't do a whole lot. But if that's what if Major League Baseball had decided, or they want to extend the penalty and do something more, listen, I wouldn't.
I mean, if you find out that they've been doing this for 3 years now, like 17, 18, and 19, and it went from banging on a garbage can to having electronics up your sleeve to tell you what pitch was coming.
Yeah, a little buzzer on your nipple is what happened. It just, if you get in a fastball, you see it.
It's like a Friday night for Abdallah.
Jose Altuve seems to be getting excited as he's in the box here.
Viking Scotter, buddy, are you coming out tomorrow to Horseshoe?
Part of the reason I'm calling, guys, I'm not going to make it. I'm heading to Kansas City with my daughter working there. She's got me and the missus two free tickets to the AFC Championship.
Nice.
So we're going there. But I want to make sure people realize I'm dodging things. I just try to put things in perspective, being a true fan. So think about this as a Viking. What a roller coaster. 2015, you make the playoffs. You lose on a Blair Walsh shank from 27 yards. Yay. 2 years after that, you have the Minneapolis Miracle, builds up your hopes, gets you all to a high level, then you choke against the Eagles and get smoked.
Rubble.
That last week, 2 weeks ago, you go and beat the New Orleans Saints with the almighty Drew Brees, Alvin Kamara, and then you lay an egg in Santa Clara because you couldn't have blocked anybody that day.
Yeah,
that defensive
horrible.
Line, we all knew they were gonna be a good pass rush team, but I didn't think at all they would dominate our run game as much as they did.
All right, well, enjoy Kansas City, all right?
Travel safe, buddy.
If they win, she gets the two tickets to the Super Bowl. So I may get an invite from my daughter to attend my first Super Bowl.
Oh, there you go.
Very good.
Hey, you know what? If not, play my teaser, okay?
No, don't do it.
And then you're going to be able to finance that trip.
Did you guys invent a new 14-team teaser? Let's try one of those.
See you, Scotty. George says, have any of you guys looked up what the Astros home versus away record was the year they won the championship?
Yeah, I did.
Living in Houston now, I have a lot of friends who keep telling me their home winning percentage was low.
Yeah, it was. In the regular season, we talked about this earlier in the show, in the regular season, they actually had a better road record than home record, but in the postseason, it was dramatically different being at home versus on the road.
They were like 9-3 at home in the postseason, and they were sub 500 on the road.
That is correct. Yes, I mean here's their splits from the regular season or the postseason. Crap!
What happened to you?
You need
one of those new apps.
I know. I knew. I was trying to. You're just going to let me hang right there, aren't you? From 2019, but they didn't. 2017 is what we're looking for,
yes,
right?
Yes, right. You want right, me
just,
to?
No, just listen. I'm hanging on the line right now. In the postseason at home, they were 8-1. In the they were 3-6 away. So
wow, 8-1?
In the postseason when they won the World Series in 2017, 8-1 at home, 3-6 on the road. And in the regular season, they were 48-33 at home, 53-28.
Yeah, well,
so they were better on the road than they were at home in the regular season. Significantly better at home than on the road in the postseason.
All right, as we said a couple of times, there we're out tomorrow at the Horseshoe Casino in Hammond. It's the book. Come check out the brand new sports book. Wager on all the championship games. They've got outstanding food. We're going to do our show there 2-6. We'd love to see you out there tomorrow. How about this? Big Cat up next in the post-game show. And then we've got Bleck and Abdallah with more fun tonight at 7 o'clock. Would you like me to call in for a live report from Loyola against Southern Illinois?
Every time you call in, Abdallah gets a little, like a zing on one of his nipples.
Yeah, could you call us at 10:05?
Okay. 5 minutes after you're off the air is ended. Hour and 5 minutes after you're off the air.
That's 5 minutes.
Okay. Thank you to Jesse Rogers, Barstool, Big Cat, and Dan Weeder. Thank you to Meller and Abdallah. For Waddle, I'm Sylvie. It's ESPN 1000. Have yourself a great Thursday night.
It's the classic.
That was fun stuff. That's fun stuff.
Hi, it's Andre Dawson, including myself, Ed Belfour.
Who's getting wild tonight? That's what I'm talking about, baby.
No hi from you.
What?
No hi from you.
I give him more buys than highs.
Waddle, waddle, waddle. Then he waddled away. Waddle, waddle. Till the very next day. Bum, 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 bum.
And thank you to all and to all a good night.